Hey, before we dive in, I just want to talk to you about something. You know, I recently hired an intern, which, you know, huge power trip. I mean, I've got someone who works for me. I mean, this is out of control. But I got to tell you, it was a pain in the butt to find this person. I had to talk with a couple different schools. I had to fill out a whole bunch of applications. I had to go through a ton of candidates to find someone who I thought was really great. And by the way, shout out to Kaylee Raglan, who's been absolutely crushing it for me. She's doing an unbelievable job. But, you know, it took a lot of time to find her. And what I should have done is I should have just gone to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply for your job. ZipRecruiter makes hiring efficient and effective with features like screening questions to filter candidates and an all-in-one dashboard where you can review and rate your candidates. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employees who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So you got to do this. You got to go to ZipRecruiter.com. And I'm going to give you a little tip because it's going to make me look good here. Go to www.ziprecruiter.com/Zach. That's my name, Z-A-K. Make sure you spell it correctly. And check it out. If you need to hire someone, if you're looking to bring someone on board, don't waste time doing the usual recruiting nonsense. Go to ziprecruiter.com and get the job done there. Okay, I'm done talking. I've talked way too long. Let's go. Here we go. Let's dive in. Episode 38, 1,000 Horses. Man, I gotta get myself into a band like this. These guys look like they're having a good time. By the way, they've got a brand new song out on country radio right now called A Song to Remember, A Drink to Forget. You gotta listen to this thing. This thing sounds like it could have been a Guitar Hero hit, if you know what I mean. You put this on, you picture the band playing in LA on the Sunset Strip, you picture them rocking at some crazy badass club in Nashville. I mean, this is a badass rock and roll band, and I gotta tell you something, I dig it. I mean, I really dig it. By the way, if you're tuning in tonight, they are hosting a live stream tomorrow, November 19th at Exit Inn right here in Nashville. It starts at 8 p.m. Central Time, and you can get tickets at momenthouse.com/co/a-1000-horses. Listen to me, that is really complicated. So what you got to do is you got to go to the socials, check the band out there, get tickets. I'm going to be tuning in, and you do not want to miss this because this is going to be an incredible show. If you've ever seen this band live, they absolutely crush it, and you got to tune in. It's that simple. Tune in, check the band out tomorrow night, November 19th, Exit Inn, live stream. Check it out. Look, I'm trying to hang with the cool kids here. I've always wanted to be in a rock and roll band, and I, you know, it's probably too late for me, but I'm just trying to get as close as I can. So episode 38, 1,000 Horses, let's dive in. Okay, so part of this record was recorded at home. Was it all done at home, or did you guys actually get into the studio with Dave to do any of it?
We did. So, for instance, like, I did all my guitar parts in my kitchen, in my house, like sitting at my kitchen table. So we had like, cause it was right when COVID started. And I had one of Dave's amps at the house and he was like, don't you have my old Princeton Reverb? And I was like, yeah. And we just got on the phone and kind of discussed what we thought the guitar parts should be and like recorded it and sent it to the engineer, you know?
We had done a bulk of the record at the end of last year, actually. So we had done a lot of that, but
I just meant for Song to Remember.
Yeah, Song to Remember, we did, we were kind of like doing finishing touches in quarantine and whatnot.
So how does that work? Like, walk me through this. So, Michael, like, you write this song with a couple other guys. You bring this song in. How does this work? Do you guys get together and do you say, guys, I've got the song, I think this might be the song. Do you play it on acoustic guitar? Do you play a work tape? Like, how do you first bring it to the band?
You know, sometimes it's just a guitar, vocal, work tape, and then, you know, sometimes it's a full, like, demo, you know, like, it depends on who you're writing with. You got a track, and you just go ahead and produce it out, but, and that's how we do it. I send songs, and they send songs. We all send songs to each other, and then kind of, hey, I really love that. We should do that, and then we play it for Dave, and then we kind of go through the record that way.
And what is Dave like when Dave comes in? Because I'm curious, because there's some pretty distinct parts on this. Like, Bill, you've got a guitar part in the chorus that's kind of like a, I don't know, like a trill kind of hammer-on kind of thing? Like, do you go, oh, that would sound great in this? Do you come up with that? Or does Dave say, hey, we need something here? Like, how's the song coming together?
Well, for instance, that guitar part, I know what you're talking about. We were FaceTiming, and I was, you know, and it was like, we needed a high part for the chorus so it would lift. And we like sang, we would like sing the part. It'd be like, what if it's like, da 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 da, and he'd be like, great, it's perfect, track it. And then calling that, you know? So I figured if you could sing it and play it, yeah, might be the right thing to do.
So you're tracking it. So is Dave keeping all these parts in his head? Because he's talking to all of you individually. Is he having this whole thing sculpted in his head and working with everyone to get it out? Is that how it's coming together? Or do you all kind of put your own part on? Like, Graham, you've got a pretty heavy bass part on it also. Like a pretty active bass line on it. Like, are you coming up with that?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of sit down and once the song starts kind of forming, like Bill's got some guitar parts down, you start kind of, you know, you got to play for the song. And I just kind of felt like that's what was best and sent it to Dave. And he's, you know, if it's good to go, Dave's like, great, moving on. If it's not, he's like, that's terrible, go redo it, you know?
Yeah.
Luckily, he was like, that's great, let's go. Let's move on to the next thing, so.
If he tells you it's terrible and you really feel like, no, Dave, listen to me, this is a good part.
He told you your part was terrible. He's always been like,
Dave's pretty all right, cool guy.
Yeah.
But there's a dialogue there. If you feel differently.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah, you gotta talk about it, you know?
And Dave can play bass, he can play drums, he can play guitar, so it's great to have a guy like that that can be creative with you. Mm-hmm. And he works really fast and it's like, kind of like, oh yeah, that's it. Let's go. Like he's like,
yeah.
He's just like, a capture
he's in the moment.
A lot of
it is
the
in
whole
the
thing.
Moment.
He's always in the moment and not like, well, let's sit back and overthink this. It's more like what's coming out of you as an artist. Let's get that. Let's get the best version of that.
A lot of the stuff will be like, you know, some of his producing, you know, guitar wise will be like, oh, you know, what would sound cool? Like maybe try the 62 Strat on the second pickup and like do your thing on it. Like just take a few passes with that tone. I think that'll be a cool sound. And then, you know, you just kind of, you know, we're in the studio working on it and it's like, oh, that's cool. And then it kind of, you know, morphs from there. So you usually do a few takes and like, you know, go from there.
Now, I've heard people say that Dave really pressures them to buy vintage gear. Or you end up buying out. He's really good at spending other people's money. Is that, is he sending you reverb links and is he sending you all kinds of shit that you're like,
oh yeah,
you know, you got
Bill and I go guitar shopping with him all the time and he's a little rich for my blood.
Yeah.
He loves it, but yeah, we'll spend the day just going to guitar stores and he'll play stuff and he loves getting gear and getting ready. He's been that way since.
He's got a gear addiction.
He's got a gear problem.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
He's got a gear problem, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys, are you guys collectors though? Like especially the, you know, you're all guitar players really, like, and bass players, like, do you go out and kind of hunt gear and go on the guitar safari and track stuff down or are you kind of comfortable with what you have and you know, you make that work?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it goes in phases, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't buy a ton of guitars cause I do find like one that I'm like, this is the best guitar I've ever owned. And then I stick with that one for a while. You know,
I kind of got like recently, I had a lot more guitars and I kind of got to this place where I was like, man, I actually don't play most of these guitars. And I'm like, I'm going to get rid of every piece of gear that I don't love. That doesn't make me feel something that I don't like, you know, cause you got some guitars that like, maybe it's not even something you play in the band or whatever. It's just like, I just love the way this guitar, it's got special songs and sounds in it that you need that, but I'm never going to play it live. But anything else, I was like, man, I'm just going to sell it and get only stuff I'm going to like use. And I'd rather have, you know, one badass guitar that I love playing than like a few that I'm like, yeah, that one's cool. And
yeah.
It just sits around, you know.
Yeah, you're better off having something that like, yeah, exactly. You're better off having something that like inspires you to play.
Yes.
As opposed to just a bunch of stuff that you kind of halfway play.
Did you forget about? Plus, but you're always open that if you pick up something and you feel it when you play it,
it's magical, I
guess I'm gonna buy this.
Yeah, which is why you can't hang out with Dave too much, because you go out and you play
and
all
you
this
do,
stuff
yeah.
And then you know your bank, you're like, what happened to my bank account? I had all this nice gear though.
Yeah.
then your wife's super stoked.
Yeah.
The white, who's got the most expensive guitar out of all of you guys? Is there one guitar the one you guys has that's like a crazy vintage thing or anything special?
I don't know. I mean,
my old vintage ones are, they're not like super expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know which would be the most expensive. I got this old 72 Tele that I got when I was like 18 years old.
Oh, yeah. Tell them that story.
This is a great story.
I got this thing at a pawn shop. A buddy of mine was like, when I was playing in the church band, and he was like kind of a volunteer helping with the church band. He was like, Zach, you know, on my vending route, I saw this old guitar down at this pawn shop. They wanted $300 for it. And I was like, interesting. So I called this guy up and I got the serial number and I looked it up. And I'm like, dude, that's like a 72 Tele. That thing is amazing. So I went down there and I was like, I'll give you $280. Trying to negotiate with him. He was like, okay, sure. So I got this thing for $280. It's like one of my favorite guitars. It's like a blonde, you know, Tele. I still play it live.
Deal of a lifetime.
That's probably a $4,000 guitar.
When you take that home for the first time, the first thing I would do is I would be cranking up some Rolling Stones and I'd be playing some Keith Richards that thing.
Jam.
Zach's a Stones guy. I think he's got a Rolling Stones tattoo probably somewhere we don't know about.
Is that true?
No, it's not true. It's tattooed on my heart.
That's what, look, when you see Keith Richards with a Tele, and he played those 70s Teles. Yeah. And I mean, that's badass. That's a great story.
I got to hold his 70 something Tele that he calls it like McCaliber or something. I got to hold it when I went and saw him in, I went to Switzerland to see the Stones. I actually am obsessed a little. And me and my wife flew to Switzerland to see him. And we were so lucky. We got to, we met their sound guy and he ended up giving us a tour like backstage and met the guitar tech. And he was like, he let me like hold the guitar and check it out. And, I mean, it was so incredible. But yeah.
That's like a good hack though, because if you try to go backstage with the Stones in Nashville, forget about it. Everybody's going to be trying to get back there. Switzerland, you've got a lot less competition.
Very low. Not a lot of people. Like it was amazing.
You can have your.
Cause that's a thing that we always talk about. It's like, if we want to go see a band, we don't look anywhere close, we just go.
Yeah, you gotta get out of town. Up in
Cincinnati.
Yeah, go to Louisville or something.
Why don't we go to Cincinnati for the weekend and go check it out? Then you can
will you guys go on outings to see certain concerts? Like, who is a band that you would go see? I guess the Stones. Like, who else is a band that if they're playing, you're gonna check the schedule and you're gonna travel together to go see them?
We all went to go see the Foo Fighters once.
Yeah, we went to Memphis. Yeah, we went to Memphis for the Foo Fighters. That was great. I got to see Tom Petty twice, which was my number one.
We all flew to New York to see, we were making the record with Dave. And he was like, all right, guys, we can't work this weekend. I'm playing Madison Square Garden, you know, with Chris Stapleton. And we were like, well, you're playing MSG. Like, we have to go. And we said, if we fly up there, will you get us in the show? And he was like, yeah. And he totally wasn't expecting us to go. And we were like, called him up. We're like, we're in New York. Yeah. Where can we pick up the backstage passes, dude? Yeah.
So, and you got in. He got you in.
He came too. Yeah.
Who do you call? Because you guys, I can't imagine you guys are buying tickets. You're way too connected. You're way too big. Who do you call? Do you call your agent? Do you call your manager? If you need tickets to something, who do you call?
It's our favorite thing to pester our agent.
Oh, no, always call the agent's assistant because they always get right back to you.
The agent's assistant is who you call to get on the list.
Yeah, look, that's who you want to know.
They can make
they
things
got
happen.
All the comps.
Yeah.
they've got the comps. Zach, I was really fascinated about this, that when you were starting out the band, you were running a photo booth company, right?
Yeah.
What is that? I don't know what that is. Is that would you bring photo booths to events? Is that what that is?
Right. So, yeah, man, I was like, when I was about 22, I was, you know, playing music and, you know, of course, rolling around in the van and all that stuff. And I'm like, man, I got to figure out a way to make some money to where I can, like, not have a real job, but be able to, like, come home, collect some money, keep going on the road and, you know, keep this thing rolling. So I basically just had this idea for putting a photo booth in, like, a bar and go home, collect some cash. And it just morphed into things over the years. But, yeah, it was like, photo booths, deliver them to events and do that whole thing. And we actually have a bunch of booths down at the bars in Nashville. My wife kind of runs the company still. So
wow. How'd you get that first photo booth? Where do you go to get a photo booth?
You know, I went to Texas. I flew to Texas, and I bought this old film photo booth for like $2,000 that this company was, they were basically turning all their machines into digital photo booths. And so they were getting rid of all their old film photo booths. And I'm like, man, the film is where it's at. Those are the cool booths, you know? So they were just basically like trying to get them out of there. And I just went and put like every dollar I had and bought this photo booth and got it back to Georgia. I slept on the airport floor and learned how to like, went into their office and they taught me how to operate it. And so I was like the photo booth guy in Atlanta. I knew how to like, you know, do the film booths, and I was like one of the only people around that knew how to operate these things. So.
Do you have to convince the bars to have them in, or I guess it's a cool attraction, right? Or do you a profit share with the bars? How do you get them into the bars?
Yeah. So, I mean, like now the machines are all digital, but they're like made to look like they're vintage photo booths. So basically for the bars, it's kind of like a cool marketing thing because they get like their logo on all the pictures. They get to collect all the email addresses. So it's kind of like, you know, it's just something fun to do, you know? So we kind of do like a custom booth for them and kind of part of their atmosphere and all that. So, yeah.
Do you make good money? Is this like, does this go to the guitar fund or like, do you make good money doing this?
What's funny is when we were between record deals, I worked for Zach.
And yeah, we did a couple of jobs.
We did a couple of events together because I needed some cash.
Yeah, for sure.
But we would end up just hanging out and like going to get beers.
Yeah, man.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's been great, man. It's been like great to have that, and my wife's kind of like really rocked and stepped in, especially like, you know, as the band started really getting busier, you know, 6 years ago when we were, you know, getting signed and all that. It kind of like, you know, it was for me the photo booth thing was always about a means to the end of continuing music, you know, so. But yeah, man, it's been great. You know, 2020 is not really a great year for photo booths either. So,
and look, if you weren't married and if you went into a bar and you were trying to pick up someone, I bet, you know, I think it's a good pickup line. If you're like, hey, you see that photo booth over there?
Oh, yeah, come on in. I got a special card. You get free pictures.
That's my photo booth.
Oh, you and your friends.
But Bill, when like around this time, you were actually working with Cobb on the first Isbell record where he really broke, Southeastern, right? I mean, do you remember that experience? Because that record to me, you know, I was a big Isbell fan in the Trucker days. And I thought that record was absolutely magical the first time I heard it. But did you feel some of that in the room, or did you go, holy shit, this is going to be a phenomenal record? Like, were you feeling that in the room?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I remember, like, I was with Dave when he got the demos for it. And he was like, or I guess they were just Jason's work tapes when they were about to start. And Dave was like, this record's going to be insane. You know, like he's like, this is going to be great. You know,
do you write him off though? Cause everyone thinks their kids are pretty, you know, like, or do you leave him away? So how often does Dave say a project is going to be insane?
Oh, I'm sure he says it about all of them.
They probably like, are if he's involved.
And he was like, well, come in and help me out and like change all the guitar strings and do the thing. And, it was awesome, man. Cause like, I mean, we were Jason Isbell fans, you know, from, the record with Alabama Pines on it. I don't know why I'm blanking on it. The record before Southeastern. And, it was pretty cool to like sit in the control room and watch him play, you know, and like, and then they recorded some of that in Dave's kitchen upstairs. So they like ran all the, cause the studio was in the basement and, you know, it was pretty amazing to watch. You know, that process and that caliber of musicianship and songwriting.
Didn't you like watch him track Cover Me Up? And yeah. Stuff? Like, I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That's pretty really awesome. Cool. And I know he recorded that, like Jason was playing that in Dave's kitchen, right? And Dave was like, don't move. I'm going to put up a couple microphones. Is that the story of how that happened?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that went.
And he just caught it right there. Cause that record feels like there's ghosts in that recording. Like that recording is insane.
Yeah,
that's part of that Dave thing where he just wants to catch you in the right moment at the right time. Mm-hmm. And then like it's lightning in a bottle, you know, that's what Dave does.
Michael like that's once in Dave's like, what was his old car?
His Mustang. He had a 60, what year was that Mustang he had?
67.
So yeah, we one time back in the day, we were cutting vocals and
it was our song Heaven Is Closed. It's on the album.
Yeah, on the
On the first album.
On the first album.
Right. Southern Alley.
Anyways, he has this badass 67
British green
Mustang,
yeah,
that he got. He was so pumped about. And he was like, fuck, let's cut vocals in the Mustang. Let's see what it sounds like. So we ran all the cables out there and put it through the window. And I had, you know, there's a picture of it somewhere. Yeah, we did vocals for some of the record in the Mustang to get the feel, get the vibe.
Yeah, it's like, you want to feel badass, feel like you're out on the open road. Let's put you in the Mustang. Sing
this
song.
Do you think it made a difference? Does it make a difference? Puts you in a different feeling?
Totally. And it just gets you fired up because it's
fun.
It's fun. It's not boring in a vocal booth with, you know, where you can't see anybody. So I was like, hell yeah, let's do it. And we're having fun with it. And that was the best part about it. So I think you capture that fun. It comes out, you know.
And no click tracks with Dave. He doesn't believe in click tracks, right? This is like, it's all, I heard him say that once. Say that again?
I said, it's all up to the drummer.
I heard him say that once where he was like, I don't believe in click tracks. And I was like, Dave, that's because you get the best players, man. That's like easy for you to say. How come no drummer in the band? Was there ever someone who thought, let's put a drummer in the band, or you never found the right guy? Why no drummer? Too expensive to bring a drummer on?
Yeah, we tried, man. We tried. Drummers
can't handle us.
We had a thing
with drummers.
Yeah. We had some great guys over the years, but I think just kind of in the end, when I think our last drummer was like, you know, for whatever reason, I got to go do this and I can't continue on. We were just like, let's just make it us. Like, let's just keep going. You know, we're all in it, and let's not make it overcomplicated.
We've come full circle too. Now we've got our original drummer from back in like 2010. Yeah. Shane. He's back with us now as our drummer for, you know, he's been with us for the past couple years, a few years now. So that's been fun, you know, because we're kind of
like
old buddies.
It's like Foo Fighters, like Pat Smear, you know, he kind of comes in and out of the Foo Fighters.
Yeah,
we just have that kind of revolving door with the drummer.
That's good. You want to keep it tight, you know. You got the thing that works. It's like you don't want to mess it up. You got a thing here. This is like you got to take this seriously. So when you guys first signed with Interscope, Michael, you got an email from, oh my God, why can't I think of his name? Legendary songwriter, Living on a Prayer. Yes, Destiny Child. Brain fart. Destiny Child sends you an email and he says, man, I'm loving this band. Or what does he say? How does he even find you?
So I got set up with Desmond through
Desmond Child, what am I saying? Yeah.
But Destiny's Child is great.
Destiny's Child. I'm having
like an email from Destiny's Child. Queen Bee emails me, you know.
I hope he never hears this. Desmond Child. He sends you an email and what, like, how's that even happen?
My wife had a publishing deal with a lady named Victoria Shaw, who a big songwriter here in town. She was like, she just said like, hey, well, you do, you know, you're doing like, you're kind of like rock music, kind of country music. Like, she's like, you need to talk to Desmond Child. So she just set me up with a meeting with Desmond. So I went over to his house and I'm sitting there and, he's like, all right, well, play me some stuff. So I played him some
in demos. Nashville. This is in Nashville. He lives in Nashville.
Yeah, he lives here. And I played him a few songs and he was like, all right, this is awesome. He's like, all right, well, come back next week, same time. And I was like, okay. So I came back and then Brian Howes was there. Brian was like, hey, play me your stuff. Like, I have a deal with Interscope and I want to see you guys play. Can you play for me today or tomorrow? So you ran the SIR to get a room to set up and jam for him. We played and he was like, all right, cool. I'm going back to LA and I'll be in touch. And we're like, all right, sure. And then get a phone call from Jeff Sosnow, who's the head of A&R at Interscope. He said, hey, I'm flying in town next week and my assistant's going to line it up, but can you guys play for me in my hotel room? So we go to the Hermitage Hotel. We got our acoustic guitars and we go in there and he sits. He's like, it's one of the funniest showcases.
Yeah, it was kind of bizarre.
I was going to say, this has got to be the worst feeling ever. This is no, this sucks. All, right?
Yeah.
So we go into this hotel room. And there's like just the four chairs set up in front of the big king bed. And he was like, and he sat in the middle of the bed like this.
Yeah, with his arms crossed.
His arms like this, and he's like, play.
This is creepy. This is weird.
He's like, you need a drink? I was like, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
He's like, main bar's right there. Yeah. So we play for him, and he just goes, we play one song, and he goes, play me another one. And he just keeps going. And then he's like, can you play for me electric tomorrow? And we're like, sure. Yeah. I mean, we can do whatever. And he said, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. So they sent us the details. We went back to SIR, set up. And that's where we met Dave Cobb. So he comes in. He's got Dave Cobb, him, and another attorney friend, and with a couple cases of Heineken. And he was like, all right, play me a song. We played one song. He walks up to the stage, and he said, congratulations, you're signed to Interscope Records. Now play me more music. And we played for probably another 45 minutes and then went out to Red Door, and Dave was there. So Dave was like, man, I got to make your record. This was, you know, before Dave was Dave, as we always say. Mm-hmm. But, and that's how it led into that deal. And we were in LA like 2 weeks later and met Jimmy Iovine. And then,
yeah, what's that like? When you meet Jimmy Iovine, is that, I mean, what's his deal?
It was very brief.
It was very brief. Yeah.
He's a busy man.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. Well, that was the first time we'd been to LA. That was the first time that I had ever been on a plane. Yeah. You know, like I was 21.
Are you serious?
Plane before, yeah. And here comes, it was like something out of a movie. The A&R guy from Interscope comes in and he's like, congratulations, you got a record deal. And he flies you to LA. He's like, you're about to meet Jimmy Iovine.
Pick you up in a car. You're going to the Riot House, except it wasn't that. What was it?
It was the Andes Hyatt House, I think, at the time.
How old are you guys when this is happening?
I was 21.
Yeah, I was 21.
Yeah.
So this is like, you got it made. This is it. That's what you're thinking. That's what you're thinking is going to happen.
We hadn't made it.
This is it. This is that. You're it.
Yeah, we were going to the Rainbow Bar and Grill.
We were rubbing elbows.
We spent 3 weeks making that record. We stayed on Sunset Boulevard at the Grafton or something for 3 weeks, going to Dave's studio to make that Interscope EP.
Yeah, because Dave was living in Silver Lake at the time, so we went to his basement and made the first little 5-song EP. And then shortly after that, we went on the road, and then Interscope kind of folded their rock department and let everybody go. So
they let go some like big names. Like that was kind of a big deal.
No, yeah, it was. That's why we didn't feel so bad about it. We're like, well, they like it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's not just us, guys.
Yeah.
I guess it's better when everyone, and then you've got like, no, they let go everyone. It wasn't us.
Yeah.
No, like 60 bands, not one.
Yeah.
So, like, well, back to the drawing board.
So, yeah, we came back home, and we finished up the little tour that we were on, and said, what are we going to do next? So we did what we always do, and we started recording and started writing a bunch of songs. And Dave he moved to town, so we started cutting with him in that time period. Like, I remember, it's funny, like before the first like Southern Audi record, we were in Dave's driveway all on the phone with our credit card companies trying to get
approved
to finance the record that which became Southern Audi. So we were trying to get like 10 grand.
Yeah, we needed something like 10 or 15 grand,
just to pay for, you know, the stuff. And
yeah, the mixer, the whole deal.
Yeah, the mixer, the whole thing. Dave was like, we'll get it. Don't worry about it. You know, we'll figure it out later, which was so cool to him at that time. And anyways, yeah, we were out there just, I'll never forget that picture. Like all four of us on the phone, like you were in the yard.
Well, let's do it. We'll make it happen.
And then we all came back and said, they said no.
Yeah, none of us got approved.
Well, hang on, Michael, you're cousins with Chris and Rich Robinson of Black Crowes, if I'm correct, right? Second cousins?
Yeah.
At any point do you think, oh my God, why don't I call them and ask for money to make a record? Surely they'd understand the dream and the goal and the project. Did you ever think about calling them and asking them for a loan or anything?
No, I didn't. You don't do business with family.
That's true, I guess. But they're second cousins. I mean, come on.
Well, I could pay you back.
Yeah.
But no, I never crossed my mind when it came to maybe we should have thought about that.
Yeah, we did hit Rich up to write with us for the record, and we wrote a few songs, one of them which ended up making it on Southern Ality. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun experience.
Yeah, we wrote Sunday Morning with him. We just kind of rented out this old church off Charlotte and brought in the gear and jammed for a few days. And that was a lot of fun.
Do they, like, when you're playing with Rich, like, is he giving you tips or is he showing you guitar moves, open tunings? Like, what's his, I mean, that dude's a great player, right?
Rich is very serious. He's basically
showing you, he's kicking your ass.
Yeah. Yeah. In a nice way.
In a nice way.
Yeah.
Very politely.
He's like, no. Play it like this. Do this. Here's the groove. This is how, like, you know, he was a good orchestrator in that sense because we were still, you know, we were a little bit younger when we were doing all that. And he's like, well, check it out. What if we did this? You know, he kind of stepped in as the more experienced player and helped us out, really.
It was fun. We were just jamming. It was, like, so casual.
Yeah. You know? That was also, like, dream come true, too.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, holy crap, we're jamming one of my favorite guitar players of all time, you know, from the Black Crowes. But I remember Rich would, like, he came to a show once we played in Atlanta because we used to play this place called Smith's Old Bar all the time. And we were, like, I mean, we played that place a couple times a month.
We were, like, the house band, yeah, almost.
Yeah.
And he came out and saw us and came backstage, and I was like, well, Rich, did you like the show? You know, and this was post-Interscope, before the Big Machine deal. And he was like, it was in that period. And he was like, man, it was good. He's like, you are using way too much gain. You know? And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. He's like, what do you have on your board? You know? And he told me, he's like, get rid of all that shit. He's like, you don't need any of it. You know? He's like, and he would just talk to me about guitar playing. He gave me some tips that night that I was like, oh, okay. And it really helped improve, you know.
Why does he tell you that? Because he's like, look, this kid's got some, this could be a really great band, but he's like, he's got to fix this tone thing. Is that like, why do you think he tells you that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why he chose, I mean, he was just being nice, I think, you know, and obviously him and Michael are very close. So I think he's trying to lend some.
In the moment though, are you like, fuck this guy, Black Crowes, and I've got my tone, I've got my gear. Who is he to come in here? And, or do you think, look, Rich Robinson knows what's up with tone. I gotta listen to this guy.
I mean, Rich Robinson is seriously like in my top three favorite guitar players of all time. So like, if Rich is like, hey man, you should do this, like, I'm definitely listening.
I mean, do you almost feel bad? I'd almost feel guilty. I'd be like, oh, I should have cleaned up tonight. I should have cleaned up the tone.
Yeah.
Clean up the tone.
I was just stoked to have the conversation with him. Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
That's really cool.
From their heroes.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they've always been really supportive of us and me growing up and Lindy. I mean, that's like, you know, I remember when I first met him, my dad felt like I was old enough to meet my second cousins. I think I was like 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. And I was in the music and I was playing guitar. So he took me to the first like show in Columbia, South Carolina. They were playing the Township Arena. I was like, hey man, well, you got any advice? And he was like, write your own songs. Don't worry.
That's what he tells you.
Yeah, he said, don't worry about covering other people's music, like, write your own songs. And then he showed me how to play She Talks to Angels, and that was when I was like, well, I'm just going to figure out how to write songs and do it that way.
I wonder if he tells you that because one of their biggest hits, you know, Hard to Handle, they didn't write. It's probably like, we could have made so much more money on this thing if we wrote it.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
He's coming at this from some experience. So how do you guys connect with Doc McGee?
So
we met Scott.
Yeah, a friend of ours, one of my publishers, introduced us to Scott McGee, his brother.
His brother, yeah, yeah.
And that's how we met Doc, was through Scott. And Scott took us on as management with Doc. And, I mean, that was just a couple of shows and some, you know, drinks playing some music and a lot of drinks at Red Door.
Yeah.
Do this,
and then we're like, yeah, let's go. So we've been with Scott for a while.
Do you guys see the movie The Dirt?
Yeah.
Is that a good representation? I mean, Gray's a lot younger in that film, but does that
you know, from what we've
Scott
heard,
says it's
not, but it is, but it's not. Like how they portrayed how everything went down was a little, you know, it was a little Hollywood,
right?
But those guys are all still close. I mean, Doc's still close with the Motley Crue guys and and whatnot, but
as far as the actor's portrayal of Doc himself, is that what you mean? Like,
do you get the mannerisms right?
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact the full contact management thing is real. Like, they would, you know.
It was the '80s, man.
You know,
is that because I mean that whole, you know, Doc and Scott and that, you know, those guys are management legends. But I wouldn't really say they're like a traditional Nashville kind of management company. Is that kind of part of the plan? I mean, I'm sure you guys could have found more of a Nashville management company, but you were like, these are rock guys who exploded some of the biggest rock acts in the world. We're doing this out in Nashville. Like, does that bring a different perspective to it? Or do you think about the 1,000 Horses business a little bit differently, having those guys as management?
Man, I think we just vibed, you know, with Scott and Doc, and we just kind of hit it off, you know, right off the bat with them. And I mean, you know, Scott was, you know, had Darius, and they were really big in the country world, so it was kind of like, it was kind of the best of both worlds for us, you know, coming from a country and rock and roll background as a band. It kind of made a lot of sense for us to partner up with those guys who, you know, rock and roll legends, set up shop in Nashville. And, you know, it was kind of the perfect matchup for us. So yeah, I don't even know if we thought through that at the time, but, you know, looking back on it, I think that that's probably part of it.
And has that had, like, prior to, you know, COVID, I mean, you guys were on the road a ton, doing a ton of dates. Like, do you think, is there a difference between maybe a country act or more of like, I feel like you guys are ride that line of a country act and a rock act. Do you treat it differently or is it all the same? Are you guys a weekend warrior band or do you go out for weeks at a time? Like how do you guys tour typically?
I would say probably more of the Nashville style, really. Like,
yeah. The tours that we're a part of are usually, you know, weekend warrior stuff, but I mean, we're not afraid to go out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks,
right.
You know, and when we go, you know, over to Europe, we're over there for a while. So we're like a hybrid of it all.
Yeah. We've done some of that, like, you know, a couple of our early tours were like, the, you know, you're gone for 2 months straight kind of thing. And by the end of the tour, you're like, I guess this is my life. I don't have a home anymore. I just live in a van and like I sleep in, we all share one hotel room, you know? So, I mean, those were fun days. I don't know if that's a lot. 2 months at a time.
Yeah, yeah. That's a long time.
And now that you have kids, does your daughter, Sunny, has she been on the road yet? Or has she had a chance during COVID?
She's only a year old. I guess, what do they say, 14 months? But she's a year. And no, she hasn't seen a show or been to one. So by the time, you know, we go back out on the road, she'll be able to, like, pay attention. So I'm really excited about her watching that show, because she loves music already and she loves dancing, so we got her little ear covers. And
she's like, Dad, I didn't know you were like a, I didn't know you were a rock star. I thought you just like grilled meat in the backyard. Yeah. I thought that's what
you're talking about. I'm a barbecue guy.
What, like, that's kind of like a like if you're like, you're cousins with the Black Crowes, Graham, you know, your, I guess your father-in-law was in Skynyrd, but like, that's weird. I mean, my dad wasn't a rock star. Like, that's gotta be that's a weird thing, right? Like how do, I guess your kids are young, so you won't know, but how do you deal with that? It's like, do you try to keep them?
We keep talking about Dave Grohl, but we love Dave Grohl, but he said, like, he's like, man, I'm like this huge rock star. And then I come home and my kids like, make me a damn sandwich.
Yeah. You know, you're not a rock star.
Like, okay.
Yeah, they just, I don't think they have any clue or idea of anything. They just know about it. They're like, you know, you're just dad.
But there's a lot of pressure to get the music taste right, because this is a, you know, critical stage in development. You want to be sure they're hearing good music. Are you playing the Beatles? Are you playing, like, what are you making sure your kid's listening to? Because they're going to be connected to the music they hear now for the rest of their life. It's going to mean something to them.
For me, with her, like, when she was born, the first song she ever heard was Tom Petty, Wildflowers.
Did you plan that? Like, your wife's pregnant, and are you thinking, when this kid is born, I want her first.
She wanted music going. My wife's a big music fan, and she wanted music going, and I was like, well, the first thing she's going to hear is Wildflowers by Tom Petty.
Why that song? Why that song?
I love that song. It's, like, one of my favorite songs of all time. It's just perfect. It's a perfect song. And that was it. And then we just, you know, after that first song plays, you forget about everything else that's playing because you got a kid in your hand. but that was important for us. And that's what we listened to around the house. We did a kid's album.
We did a kid's song.
Song on a kid's album. And she loves the kid's album of all these covers, and some of them are originals. But we try to keep a nice mix. Frank Sinatra, that was a big thing growing up, and she loves that. Petty's always on. You know, we stick to the classics.
My house is like, we've been playing the Baby Beatles for My wife and my daughter. Yeah,
what are the baby Beatles?
Well, it's Casper Baby Pants, who I think is the guy from.
Wow.
Casper Baby Pants.
Yeah.
Wait, why can't you play your kid? I'm just curious. Can you just play your kid the original Beatles? I feel like Yellow Submarine. I feel like. We do that too.
Yeah,
the baby Beatles, baby Paul, baby John.
Baby Paul. What's wrong with the original Beatles? The baby Beatles. This is a. These kids are gonna have culture.
Oh yeah.
So typically during COVID, you know, you're hanging out, you're calling, you're texting, you go over to the jam house and what do you call it? Does it have a name? This room? It's not called the jam house. What do you call it?
The stable.
The horse
quarters.
The horse court. What? We had a better name for it.
What was the one?
Oh, the band cave.
The band cave.
Do you go, like, will you go over there and it's like, guys, we got to practice, we got to rehearse. Are you writing? I mean, you've got a record done. Are you still working on new songs? Like, how do you guys stay busy?
Yeah, when there's power over there, we go over there. we've been over there hanging. We've been doing a lot of, this type of, Zoom stuff and performances and all that. We've got a little bar set up in there, so it's been our little spot that we could go this year. Actually, been really lucky to have that.
Yeah, it's been killer. But yeah, we've been writing songs for whatever's next, and and then obviously Son Remembers Out and at radio, so we've been doing a lot of stuff like that. But then some days it's like Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Just out here barbecuing.
And we haven't
just
actually
get on the grill first thing.
Next week was our first. We haven't been rehearsed full band with all the guys, because we haven't really done any shows since February, so we have this we're doing a live virtual show in a couple weeks over at Exit Inn, so we're getting the whole crew fired back up. We got all the guys, the band, and everybody. We're gonna bring in some background girls, singers, and really excited about it, so we're putting the whole thing back together on there.
It's gonna be nice to jam together.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, okay, a song to remember, A Drink to Forget. This has got that classic thing that Desmond Child always talks about, where he always says that when he's writing a song title, a hit song title for him is two opposing things in a song. Dude Looks Like a Lady, or You Give Love a Bad Name. He says, if you can get two opposing things in a song, that's a hit song title. Here we go. It's Song to Remember, A Drink to Forget. That's a hit song title, according to Desmond Child. I mean, are you thinking about those two opposing opposites?
When he kind of mentored me early on, he would always, when we'd write, he'd always say, titles, give me your titles.
And he's big on titles.
Yeah, big on titles. And maybe that worked out kind of
right
over the years of learning from him, about writing songs. But yeah, I guess he does.
I remember that. Yeah. He'd be like, I remember Michael and I went over there to write with Desmond once, and he was like, do you guys have any titles? And I mean, I think personally for me, I think I could have counted on two hands the amount of songs I've written in my life up to this point. Yeah. And we were like, I was like, well, no. And he goes, well, I'll be back in an hour. Y'all think of 10 titles, And that was like songwriting lessons from Desmond.
Yeah. He's a big title guy.
Yeah.
Big title guy.
The title, tell your story.
Yeah.
Right.
You gotta get the title right. A song to remember, A Drink. This is a fun song because, when I hear this song, to me, I just picture you guys at the Roxy, or I picture you guys at a club or a theater somewhere, just playing this. It's almost visual. I can picture this band being played, 1,000 horses rocking out somewhere. This is a fun song, and it's very rock and roll. It's not too complicated. This is, you can pick this up and play this, and it sounds great, feels good. This is not, this is not math rock. Of course it's not, but it's very approachable, but in a good way. It's a one-time listen and you get it. You feel good about it.
Thanks, man. Well, thanks. We'd love to go play the Roxy.
Right. Yeah. We're actually really excited. This is such a weird year this is the first time we've had a single out that we haven't really, and we've been playing it a lot acoustic together, for, different things, but we haven't performed this song for an audience full on as a band.
At all,
at all. So it's kind of weird, but we're really excited to actually play it for a crowd, especially it's been out and people are gonna know the song. So it's gonna be a whole different experience this time.
People are gonna love this. They're already loving it.
Oh man.
1,000 horses. What's been unsaid? What have we not said? What's been untouched?
Well, what do we got?
Zach's been working on his juggling act, you know?
Yeah.
Are you a juggler?
I can juggle.
There are some juggling.
Do you juggle?
I mean, I not really. I mean, yeah. No, not really.
No, but are you balls or do you clubs or like, are you really into this?
I'm not that into it.
He's a casual.
He's juggling. Although I was in a juggling performance show in fifth grade. So I do have a foundation for juggling, but I'm a
Get out of here.
Who's it? I mean, that's it. I can't do
one of you guys. One of you guys is really into space, right? Who's into space?
Graham's into space.
Do you follow this? Like, are you always reading like about space and like
yeah.
What's happening with the moon? They just found like water droplets on the moon. Like, what's going on over there?
There's a bunch of frozen water up there. They were thinking it was just on the poles and the dark side. Now they say it's everywhere. Talking about putting people back up there in 2024. I mean,
does this get you off? Like, you're freaking out about this.
I'm all about it. Like, space is a trigger word for me.
Your love of space is like contagious. Like, if you go to Graham's house, he'll be like standing on his back deck drinking a beer, and he's like, the International Space Station is about to come over the thing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, check the app. And like,
you got me with that shit too. I got the app. I go out on my back porch now. I'm like,
I'm all about it.
It was really crazy. I never thought you could just stand there and you can see the space station, like, you know, it's like this big star.
You can actually see it with a naked eye?
Oh yeah, dude.
Like, yeah, it's like really crazy. Bright.
Yeah, it's like the brightest star in the sky for like, you know, 30 seconds while it cruises over you at 18,000 miles an hour or whatever it's traveling. It's crazy.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And it goes around the Earth 90 times a day or a minute or what? Minute. So within an evening you can see it a couple times.
You can see it a couple times. But then it comes at different like trajectories, right? It's like always like going, you know.
So you've got to plan for it. You've got to catch it at the right. Do you have a good telescope?
No, I need one.
Graham.
Maybe that's my Christmas gift to myself.
Yeah, you need to get
I need to get a telescope. That's my telescope.
When it's one of your like birthdays, do you guys feel like there's a pressure to get gifts for the other person? You say, screw it.
We always get each other the same thing we got each other last year.
Nothing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. We have a rule, like, since the very beginning of this band, we're like, we don't do birthday or Christmas gifts.
Yeah,
we
we're obligation free when it comes to gifts.
No gifts.
Bill's a good gift giver. Bill got me some Rolling Stones socks that are like the best gift ever.
Yeah, but for no occasion.
Yes. That was a sweet. That's like the best kind of gift. Just like,
I'm a sweetheart.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, saw this, thought of you.
Yeah, it's like, you know, flowers. Sometimes I get Michael Flower.
Yeah, drop by and get a nice little bouquet of roses.
Just because, you know?
Yeah, hey.
Oh, man.
Graham, I think we got to get you a telescope, man. I can't believe you don't have one.
I think it's got to happen. I'll campaign for this. I love it.
What do you read? Where do you go to look for information on space? Like what do you have a web browser you're always looking at, or like how do you get into this?
Gosh, there's like, I feel like lots of different outlets are covering a lot about space right now, just because it's like there's a lot going on and Elon Musk.
We're all trying to escape Earth, basically.
Yeah. We're like, we gotta get out of here.
Everybody's real interested in space right now.
So kind of all over the place. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
You get your magazine subscription. Get you some night classes.
Yeah. Futurism is one that does like a lot of space coverage.
BuzzFeed, a lot of great information.
Yeah. Snopes. I don't know.
Wikipedia.
Reddit. Actually, Wikipedia is pretty solid. I go on Wikipedia trails just about some random thing. Like, I want to know the population of like some city in Russia or something, and I just like read about it. Very strange.
Do you guys play, like, do you guys ever feel like, oh man, I'd love to figure out, do you guys ever still sit down with records and work out the parts or the guitar parts and like, do you still feel like you practice a lot, or at this point you're like, I got it, I'm good. I'll show up for the band rehearsals and that'll be it.
Yeah, I try to find like a guitar solo or song that like I've never learned before and just sit down and learn it every now and then just to like, I mean, that's to me is a lot more fun than like running some like scale or you know, exercise over and over and over.
Yeah.
And like, and it kind of brings me back to the days like when I was a kid and I had like 8 pages of tablature of like, you know, Stairway to Heaven, and I like learned it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now you have
YouTube.
be like, reeling in the years guitar solo, and there's some dude somewhere.
Yeah,
like,
let's figure the whole thing out.
Yeah, he's figured out. He's like, and he just.
Yeah. Back when we could still play shows, I have like a fun cover band with a couple of buddies. One of the guys from Cadillac 3 is in it. It's called The Easy Party. And so we learn a lot of songs for that. So it's like fun to sit down and like really use your brain to like learn something new and progress musically. And, yeah, it's fun.
I remember those days with the Stairway to Heaven tab.
Yeah. Oh, that's, man. That's the first time I learned.
You had to learn to play
Guitar,
Stairway to Heaven.
Guitar One magazine, I still have it in my mom's house. Stairway to Heaven tablature in the back. And that's how I learned how to play it.
Yeah, and that song taught you everything. That taught you finger picking. That taught you how to shred. That taught you power chords. Everything is in that song.
It took a while.
You had to be
that's crazy. It.
I don't know if I can play it.
No, Stairway to Heaven, man. Once you know it, you...
Yeah, it's somewhere deep in the recesses.
I was thinking about this recently because I was watching a tutorial. I'm like an amateur guitar player. I was watching a tutorial and someone was doing something. It's a little bit of a jazzier thing. He was doing a chord melody to Stella Starlight. And he said something that was like, it's Stairway to Heaven. Play Stairway to Heaven. And I had to think for a second. I was like, wait, what is that? And I it came back quickly. But I kind of forgot it for a minute. I was like, wait, what is he talking about there?
Stairway to Heaven's like riding a bike, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It comes back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most riffs I forget. I learned a ton of riffs when I was really young. I can't. I feel like I, if I had to play Purple Haze, I'd have to figure it out for a second. If I had to play, Sunshine or Love, I think they'd come back quick, but I'd have to figure them out.
You can always play Inner Sandman. Everybody can always play that.
There's a right way and a wrong way.
There is a right and wrong way to play that, though. Yes.
What's the right? Is this open string thing, or what's the wrong way to play it?
I think the way that we play is probably the wrong way.
You gotta say it, I'll show you.
Yeah.
Whatever a thousand horses does, that's the wrong thing. Don't do that.
Almost correct with a thousand horses.
We have actually
don't do that.
To Rich's original words to you to write your own music. We do some covers and all, but like we've never been like a big cover type band, you know? I don't know. Maybe we're not good enough.
Yeah. That might be the thing that we struggle with the most. It's more like,
hey, we're going to do this song. And then we're like, oh, yeah. And then next thing you know, it's like, we lose interest in it.
Well, we'll like, you'd rather just play our song.
Yeah.
What's a cover that you might do, though? Like, if you're going to throw a cover in, what's one that you guys have played in the past?
We did, like, Tom Petty, Won't Back Down for a while.
Maybe Free Fallin' for a minute on that acoustic.
Free Fallin'.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've taken Hard to Handle and really mastered that one.
Yeah,
we've got that one down.
Yeah,
the tribute. I don't know. We're open for cover ideas.
Yeah, you got any ideas? This is the problem with covers.
Yeah,
what do you cover?
Zach.
Yeah, Zach.
Oh yeah, we do
Dead
Flowers, old Stone song.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite Stone songs, and I love the little fills. The electric fills in that.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best, yeah.
Are amazing. I love when there's one fill where it just goes, and, oh my God, it's timed perfectly in there.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
It almost right.
Yeah.
We kind of up a little and play, it's like, you know, that song's kind of a country song too, which is awesome.
Totally.
That's what another thing about the Stones, anyway, I don't get going on Stones again, but.
Well, that's like a country song with some not so country chords in it, right? There's kind of some weird chords in there, right? Is there like there's a flat seven major?
They're pretty much major, like major vibe, but like it's just got that twang, you know? It's like British guys doing American country. It's kind of awesome.
I love that. Michael, do you ever struggle with you're the singer, you're out there singing all the time. Have you ever taken vocal lessons, or has that ever been an issue with like losing your voice or anything, or you're always just good to go?
I do vocal lessons, and you know, when we had background singers out on the road, Kristen, who was with us, she is like a trained professional vocalist, so she would always take care of me, and we would try to be responsible and do the right thing. But you know, after years and years, it definitely can wear on you. I've never had a problem like where I lost my voice for a tour or a show. But Yeah, that's just luck of the draw.
Lots of water, lots of sleep.
Lots of water, lots of sleep. I always go to bed first.
Yeah, we try to be somewhat responsible. Take care of the big guy here.
I love there's a Billy Joel interview where someone says, "Do you do any vocal routines or do you warm up in any way?" And he says, "I'll tell you what my vocal warm up is. I walk from my dressing room to the stage."
That's amazing.
That's classic. 1,000 horses. Guys, you guys are bringing the rock to country music, bringing the rock to Nashville. We don't have a lot of bands. There's not that many bands in the format.
Yeah, that's true.
You guys are doing a service to the genre, playing in a band.
We're trying to hold it down.
Yeah, we're trying to hold it down. Bands, man.
We love bands too, and I think the world needs bands, you know?
Totally.
The world needs bands. They're a beautiful thing. I love bands. You get into them. Follow the personalities. You have your favorite member. You follow the different things. It's fun. It's a lot more depth there. If you're trying to build a brand, everybody talks about, you know, brand, building a brand for your artist. And we have a band. There's a brand built in. Brand is already built into the band of just the people who are in it. There's something everyone can relate to and see themselves in. Bill, you've got a mustache. I'm sure that connects with a lot of people somehow. That's a...
We need to cover like all aspects of the facial hair spectrum.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's true, actually. Is that like a Joe Walsh thing? You know, you almost look a little bit like Joe Walsh. Do people ever tell you that?
Yeah. Well, let's go, Joe. I was like, Dickie Betts had a mustache, and you know, so did Joe Walsh, and you know, Russell Brand from Almost Famous had one. Not Russell Brand, Russell Hammond.
Yeah.
Almost Famous. I was like, you know,
does your wife like the mustache?
Oh, she loves it.
I think you're pulling it off, man. I think this is a good look.
Mustache.
Yeah. He's pulling it off.
We stick together, you know. You see the mustache guy, and she's like, mustache, you know.
mustache guy, I love this. 1,000 horses. I think we've said it all. What's been unsaid? Have we done this? We've done this.
I feel like we've done it, man. A lot of fun, like.
We've covered the stash.
Yeah,
that's right.
We've covered the stash. I was worried we were leaving something out, and then we got the stash in there, and now I'm feeling good.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
1,000 horses.
What did they post on that Instagram, the Stasher?
There's a fan account called, my last name's Satcher, and if you switch the A and the T, it's Stasher. You know, so there's Bill Stasher, and they just make memes with my mustache all the time. And, you know,
it's pretty good.
Put mustaches on and wear them to shows and stuff. Hey, I'm here for it, you know?
Yeah, shout out to the stable.
Shout out to them.
They do a lot of fun stuff on there.
Do you guys ever have fans come up to you and say, I imagine that a lot of fans come up to you and say something like, I hate country music, but I like 1,000 horses. You guys are bringing me, like, you guys are that kind of entry gate, I bet, for a lot of people. And I bet there are a lot of young people that are discovering 1,000 horses and then going down the rock path and then maybe going down the country path also and turning them on. Like I mean, the fans are, it's a wide range of fans, right?
Totally. We have heard that, like people that are more like into rock music and they're like, man, I like your vibe. I don't really generally listen to country and whatnot. But we've talked about how, I mean, we feel like the genre stuff is getting like, it's not like it used to be. I feel like, you know, you were like diehard Fear One genre back in the day. And like, man, I only listen to this. I only listen to country. I only listen to rock. I just feel like people are more like, maybe like I feel a little more open to just like listening to different stuff they like, you know, and stuff is kind of like blending genres. So it's getting a lot more like all across the board. Yeah. You know?
The people's playlists are like multi-genre.
Yeah,
playlists,
totally.
Because they just like what they like. And then you can put it all in one, you know, mixed CD.
Right.
What's that?
A mixed CD.
I know. The genres got to give people a little more credit because I grew up listening to a ton of different genres and format. I wasn't a box. Yeah, I think most people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's our generation that we're all like, well, man, my first concert was Alan Jackson, but we'd listen to Bone Thugs and Harmony on the way to school and then rock Metallica on the way back. So it was like, you know, I had 3 older brothers, so you're kind of we all had siblings, so it's like you're engulfed in everything.
Yeah, you listen to it all. And that gives you the best perspective, and then you pull elements from different places, and that makes it interesting when all comes together. You got 1,000 horses. Guys, a song to remember, a drink to forget. If you're listening to this, you got to listen to this song. You got a picture of the band playing at the Roxy. There's girls everywhere. Doc McGee's in the back doing God knows what. pounding the promoter. This is a classic rock band. This is a country band. This band does not go away. They've been through it all. Record deals, everything. This band is hanging around. They are not going anywhere. They are in it for the long haul. 1,000 horses. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for traveling to find power. We lost power. We found power. Stay well out there. Thanks for coming on. Stay safe in COVID. And I can't wait to see you guys at a show.
Thanks again for tuning in. And thanks again to 1,000 horses for taking the time to come on to the show. I mean, that is a cool band right there. Who doesn't want to be in that band? I mean, those guys have a good time. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to our newsletter at NashvilleBriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.